This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Today, listeners, we welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Susan joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a telephone call this afternoon. The number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and you'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? Give us a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Well, when you came in the door this afternoon, we said hello, and then you told us you'd been working with student-athletes recently about cooking, and you're actually doing cooking classes.
Right.
So I thought that would be fun to talk about here at the outset.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It's very exciting. And, of course, one of the main things that we think about with nutrition is we can talk as much as we want about healthy food, but we've got to be able to prepare it. So as student, what I find is as students come up now through high school and college, a lot of them have had some experience cooking, but many of them have not. And so what I do with a lot of the teams and the athletes I work with and here on campus as well is we're starting just very quick, easy cooking classes that may even be just a 20-minute session on how to make something very fast. And we're kind of doing them as study breaks. And so athletes may be studying and they take a quick break. We're in the same building and they can come by. And last week they learned how to make several different types of quick smoothies, one that was a little bit higher in protein for recovery and another one that's just a fast, higher fiber smoothie. And this week it's paninis, so which is, you know, a very easy and quick
sandwiches,
way.
Sandwiches, very popular.
Exactly. So, and actually a sandwich, people don't think about it, but particularly for somebody who's active, just a sandwich or even half a sandwich and a piece of fruit is really a perfect snack because you get covered all the nutrient groups. You know, you have something like a half a turkey sandwich and fruit and you've got protein, carbohydrate, fiber, vitamins and minerals, and it's easy and it's fast. And so we'll be doing some fun snacks, and my student interns, who are primarily juniors and seniors in dietetics, actually coordinate the classes, and they decide on the recipes for things that they think other college students would like to eat. And we develop recipe plans from those and go with that.
Well, tell us what goes into a healthy panini.
Well, first of all, you look for a healthy meat, or if there is meat in it.
Lean meat.
A lean meat like a turkey or ham. One of them tomorrow night's just a ham and cheese and with onions and tomatoes and just a quick, easy thing like that. So something like ham and cheese, again, is very easy, and you can always now find 2% cheese or even a good cheddar cheese that's 2%. Now you can find those or American cheese that's lower fat. One thing that we really focus on with athletes is help them understand they don't have to have everything fat-free. And sometimes I think they don't try things because they think they're going to not be healthy for them. And so we try to use maybe low-fat mayonnaise and low-fat cheese and in a way that it still drops the fat considerably but generally tastes better. And so we'll be doing things like that. And then I think, you know, so you look for that. Maybe you have ham, turkey, roast beef, even Canadian bacon works well because that's a low-fat meat that's sometimes a little bit more expensive but works. And then if you do add cheese, maybe a lower-fat version, or certainly we look at one thing that you can do with paninis is just use the grated cheese, and then you probably aren't going to use that much, but you still get the flavor. And then we try to just load with vegetables, too, and that's very helpful as well. And so that's kind of will be the base of what we do, what my students actually do tomorrow night, and coordinate that one. So we've got ones on crock-pot cooking coming up, so that's one of my big keys when I'm working with college students is to make sure that they have a Foreman grill and a crock pot because I think those are two really easy ways to make particularly foods that might be higher protein foods eat more quickly
And for busy folks with folks with studies and practices and games and competitions and whatnot, that's important.
It's very helpful because sometimes there's just not much of a break during the day. And, of course, typically most athletes on campus will practice in the afternoon, maybe in the morning too, but often they'll practice from 2 to 5 or 3 to 6, something like that. And, of course, when you get home after that big practice, you're not really going to probably take time to make a big meal a lot of nights, nor have the time, but you're also going to be so hungry. So getting some things set up and ready to go so that you can walk in the door and eat within 10 or 15 minutes helps recovery, for one thing, helps you recover from workouts better if you eat faster. And then also, generally, you're going to eat healthier if you got something that's sort of put together and somewhat prepared.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon. If you've got a question about diet or nutrition, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, speaking of recovery, once your body has exerted itself and you want to take in to replenish what you've lost, what you've burned, the fuel that you've burned, that's called recovery. There's also another kind of recovery, and that's when you're coming back from an injury.
Right.
Or you're coming back, you're trying to get back into the swing of things maybe after you've had a surgery. When you work both with athletes and with the general public, what kinds of things are you doing with folks to help them get back on their feet and get going?
Yeah. Well, there are a few things we look at right away. Sometimes a concern that people may have after surgery in general is their appetite. So sometimes appetite goes down, and that might partly be due to medications they're on, pain meds or other medications, anti-inflammatories. And so one of the first things that I do is try to make sure they start eating. You know, even if they can't eat a lot of solid food, at least get some liquid calories in. And that's where things like Ensure or Carnation Instant Breakfast or some of these drinks can be really helpful after a surgery or after an injury as well, just to keep the fluids coming and keep some nutrition going. Because what we'll often find is if you go a couple of weeks and you don't eat well after surgery or after an injury, then it's a lot harder to get back. And, of course, it's a lot easier to lose more of the lean muscle mass that you might have had prior to the injury or surgery. So that's very important. So we look at that, and we look at trying to make sure there are enough liquids. You know, people don't think about it, but sometimes, too, if someone's bedridden or they're not able to get up as much, of course, they don't want to drink as much because they don't want to have to go to the restroom. So, but if you're not hydrated, the body can't utilize nutrients as well, and it's harder to heal. So trying to make sure to find a balance with that so you're staying hydrated, and that might be a time where you get more things like 100% vitamin C, orange juice, and drink something. I always tell my clients, you know, drink something that's really going to benefit you. And don't worry so much about, you know, you do need calories. I think people do think, oh, they're not working or they're not moving, so they don't burn much energy. And what we forget is that most of the calories we require during the day are just our needs to maintain our body, not necessarily exercise calories unless you are training, you know, like a collegiate or professional athlete 3 or 4 hours a day. That certainly is a big part of your calorie intake. But for most of us, if we exercise, it might be 30, 45 minutes, 60 minutes a day, and that probably is not going to bring in or not going to really count for more than 300 or 400 calories that we burn. So most of what we need, we're still going to need, even when we're injured. And sometimes even after you're ill or after you're injured, your body does require even some more calories for healing. So make sure you eat enough. That's a big thing. Make sure you stay hydrated. There are some nutrients that can be helpful. Occasionally I'll have athletes who've really got a lot more inflammation. That doesn't seem to be going down, so they're looking at it from certainly with her physician and any medications that can be used. And then sometimes we'll add things like fish oils, for example, which can be very helpful and anti-inflammatory. And so I've got a couple football players I'm working with now where they're taking fish oil and they've got some extra vitamin C they're taking, which, you know, may be helpful. We don't know for sure, but it might be helpful with healing. And then we also make sure that their protein intake is pretty high because that's important for healing as well. So we try to look at all those things and say, well, let's get back as fast as you possibly can. Of course, the coaches are usually saying, how fast can they get back? And sometimes I think it's underestimated how when someone doesn't take care of the nutrition part, how that really does affect how fast you can either start your rehab. Might not be an athlete, might be someone after surgery just being able to start your rehab.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all know from, you know, not feeling well, coming back from a cold or, you know, an intestinal bug or something, you know, once you start to feel like you're eating, or it really helps you come back.
Exactly.
So, well, we've got a couple of listeners who would like to talk with you this afternoon. So let's go to the phones. Susan Kundrat, registered dietitian, our guest this afternoon. Our first listener this afternoon who we welcome to the program is on line one in Paris. Hi. Hello?
Is this? Are you calling me Paris?
Yes.
Okay. I've been hearing about this plastic, about not storing things in plastic, that it's a dangerous thing. It goes into the food. How about storing water in milk jugs?
Well,
milk containers. Do they contain that plastic that they're talking about?
Do you mean the milk containers that are more cardboard containers?
Well, it's kind of new, I think. The idea that the plastic is not a good thing to. It has a kind of, haven't you?
Yeah, sure.
Might not have heard about it.
Sure, I know what you're talking about. And I guess a couple things I would say, like you mentioned, I think there is some concern that do we use plastic too much for one thing, and a lot of people are reusing plastic, and sometimes those are plastics that really aren't meant to be reused, and so there is some concern. For example, if you have water bottles and you continue to refill them, is some of that plastic or the chemicals and some of that plastic maybe leaching into the water? And so one good rule of thumb is to, you know, as you mentioned, maybe think about other things that you could use and not just rely on plastic. So maybe there are pitchers that are more like the old time, you know, lightweight metal pitchers or China pitchers or things like that. If that's feasible to use, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, I think there's still a lot we're finding out about the whole issue with plastics, but it has become more of a concern. And I was thinking about it the other day, just along the lines of when you buy food and how so much of the food we buy now in these single containers, and there's so much plastic we get with food because that's the way a lot of food is packaged, and it never used to be that way. And so that, as you mentioned, that is a big concern. Now, I think if you did store water, I would probably store it maybe in something that is, you know, I don't know about the milk containers, if they would be the kind that have that are more cardboard, that have the wax on the outside, or those plastic milk jugs. Seems to me that those are more one-use type things as well, that I might use something more, again, I'm thinking of the old kind of not that heavy, but metal containers that we do water in.
Aluminum, metal, glass.
Yeah, glass for sure. Glass containers, and a lot of people, I think one of the concerns, too, is all the microwaving. And a lot of times you may notice if you microwave a dish in something that's plastic, sometimes that'll heat the actual plastic. And you can see when you take the food out that it's kind of burnt around the plastic. And those types of things we're very concerned about, too. So one simple thing people can do, as well as the drinking water, is looking at when you do microwave something, put it in a glass bowl or put it in something besides plastic to microwave it in. Because it seems to be much safer. And then, of course, we've got to be careful that the plastic wrap on top doesn't get down into the food as well. So it's probably better to put a paper towel over the top if you're microwaving in a glass dish.
Wax paper, maybe?
Or wax paper. Yeah, something that's not going to have that.
All right. I want to thank the listener for her call. And let's take another call now. Someone waiting on a cell phone, line two. Hi.
Hello. Yeah. At the first of the year, I set a New Year's resolution to lose some weight, to lose 30 pounds, and I'm within a pound or two of that now. And my primary method of losing that weight has been to fast for 24 hours once a week. What do you think about fasting as a way to diet and to lose weight? And I'll take my answer off the line.
Okay.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your weight loss, because that's a significant amount of weight to lose in a year. And that is a doable amount if you have it to lose in this length of time. So you may have done things at a good level with that. I would say with fasting, some of it depends on how often you do it. And like you're saying, maybe once a week for fasting for 24 hours certainly is significant. I mean, that's a lot. That's one day a week that your body's not getting nutrients. I wouldn't say that's probably the the best way to do it, if you could continue to eat during those days, even if you eat very small amounts of food, and your idea of maybe taking one day a week where you're saying, well, I'm really going to watch it one day a week, is not a bad idea, I think, in general. But what we do know is that the body, you know, every time we fuel the body, we burn calories. And so it is beneficial to keep on an eating schedule every day of the week if you can. But you may find that what you do on one or two days a week, you just have very small portions, but you still eat consistently. That might be my preferable way to do it, just because that way we know it, we probably aren't messing with metabolism and having encouraging the body to kind of slow down or shut down or have to burn its own muscle or any of those kinds of things. And so that might be the preferable way, and especially now that you're coming towards your goal where you may need to be increasing calories a little bit anyway, this might be a good time to say, well, I'm still going to maybe have my day a week if that works for you, but I might have an apple in the morning and I might have, you know, half a sandwich at lunch, and maybe your total calories are still way under what you would typically need, but you're still fueling your body consistently, which would be what we know from research to probably be the best way to do it, if that makes sense and if you feel that that's feasible to do.
Yeah, I don't know that I could do that. I think I'd start to kind of shut down a little bit. My brain would kind of feel
right.
Fuzzy.
I mean, that's the other thing we do know. When you don't get any fuel during the day, that can bring blood sugars down. Some people will get headaches, and it's more difficult for the body to function just in that 24-hour period too. So it may just be a lot less stressful on the body in general to say, well, I'm still going to eat. I'm going to really watch the amount I do eat. And that might be easier overall in your total body and managing everything in terms of the system.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon. She's a registered dietitian. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She works with the general public, and she also works with college. And you work with some professional athletes from time to time?
I do from time to time. I don't work with too many. I work with there's no set team that I do work with right now, but occasionally I'll work with professional athletes as well, or a few Olympic athletes, so that's interesting too.
Yeah. Susan is also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, when someone is setting out with a goal like that, 30 pounds within a year, mm-hmm. sounds very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
What else might you want to do as you set out on that road so that that's a good goal, that's a mm-hmm. moderate goal, but what else do you want to do to make sure that you're doing it the right way?
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of things. One of the things that I do with clients, if they're considering losing a significant amount of weight like that, is if possible, we also do body composition testing. So, which you could do with a caliper. It's very easy where I would take caliper testing. I did one today where it takes six different spots on the body and be able to check the body composition when you add up all those numbers, and then you get an average of where they are. What that does is when someone loses weight, we can actually determine and hopefully find that they've lost body fat but not lean muscle mass or lean mass in general, which could be bone. You know, when we lose weight, we can lose nutrients from the bone. We can lose from the muscle. And that's just one way to check body composition. But that's very helpful because it's helpful for the client because they can see maybe in a 2 or 3 month time period where we come back, they say, gosh, we've lost 5, 6, 7 pounds. And we can look and say, well, was it mostly body fat that you've lost, at least from the composition? Because that's obviously what we want. We want to, if we need to lose weight, we want to maintain what's not body fat. Yeah, exactly. Because what happens sometimes is we lose much muscle and then we know that that really affects metabolism negatively. And as we age anyway, we tend to drop metabolism and we don't burn as many calories. So that's important to maintain muscle.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on line one in Urbana, excuse me. Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I used to be a competitive athlete, and since I've kind of quit competing, I've had a royal battle with my weight. In fact, from my competitive weight, I'm actually up about 30, 35 pounds.
Yeah.
And I used to be a competitive cyclist. I mean, I used to do about 15,000 miles a year on my bike.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, doing 500-mile weeks and,
mm-hmm.
you know, 75, 80 races a year. And, you know, you can pretty much eat whatever you want. I mean, I was eating some, you know, 4,000, 4,500 calorie days.
Sure.
And now I find that I'm still kind of battling that. I mean, I love eating. I mean, after 10 years of living like that, I mean, mm-hmm. it becomes pretty habit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to see if you had any suggestions for people who've kind of let go of their competitive demon and how they get on with life and keeping their weight under control.
Yeah, well, Ed brings up some really interesting points and very important ones, too, because you're not alone, you know, with trying to deal with those situations. I think a couple things that can be helpful. One is to make sure you're getting enough volume of food without as many calories. And so, you know, for example, you might be interested. There's a book out now called Volumetrics, which is, it sounds kind of hokey. It's really not. It's really sound science. It's based on how to try to get more food without the high energy density or the high calories of the food. And a lot of that is certainly adding fibers and doing things like more fruits and vegetables, things we would intuitively think of to bulk up the amount of food you eat without the calories. Because I do think we get used to a certain amount of food, particularly as an athlete, like you say, and it's a lot of food, and you don't really have to monitor it that much, certainly with the training that you are doing. So that's one thing I would keep in mind. The other thing I would consider, if you're not already, is just starting just a real moderate strength training program. Because so much of it, when we have been an athlete and then don't do as much, is the change in muscle mass. And again, lean body mass and muscle mass affects metabolism more than anything in the calories we burn. So if you're not already, you might say, well, I'm not going to get back to that point, certainly, but I am going to start doing some more strength training. Because that, particularly as a male, that will increase your body's ability to burn more calories. And even if you don't get bigger muscles, you get more taut muscles, and that's going to be helpful. So I would consider doing that. And then the other thing I would do, too, is just try to figure out, well, where would be a good weight range for you now? Typically, especially as a cyclist, it's probably somewhere. It might be somewhere between where you are now and where you were. Mm-hmm. It may not be that you need to get, of course, down to where you were, of course, competitively, but it might be that for you, you would feel better even dropping 5 or 10 pounds. Because,
I fluctuate, actually. Sometimes within maybe 2 weeks, I can pick up and drop 5 pounds or so. Right now, I'm about 205, but my competitive weight is like around 168, 170.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like a Clydesdale right now. I mean, just even taking a few pounds off, it's so hard to keep them off. I mean, I've gone down to 185 and 190, and then I kind of get back to life, and then all of a sudden, you know, you step on the scale when you haven't been concentrating for 2 weeks, and you know, you're 205 again.
Right, right. Well, and that's where maybe trying to set up, so again, you're thinking about how can you encourage your body to burn more calories, and one thing would be, again, trying to eat enough but not as many calories with bumping up the volume of food, of fruits and veggies. Another thing might be spreading out your food more. I don't know if you do that now. Sometimes as an athlete, you automatically are eating so many times a day because you need to for training.
You're like doing like more like 4 or maybe even 5 smaller meals. And just
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So spreading that out. So every time we eat, we know that gives us energy, but it also boosts metabolism, and you burn calories every time you eat. So that can be helpful, just spreading out your food. And then the other thing I would consider is just saying, yeah, what can I do moderately that activity-wise, that maybe I'm even adding walking in my day. It's not necessarily a workout, but I'm just more active, and then maybe considering some strength training to the point where you can really change your body to that level and encourage your body to burn more calories as well.
And this is my last part of the question right here. I did kind of make a life change more than just leaving cycling. I essentially committed to becoming a vegetarian as well.
Mm-hmm.
I almost hesitate to think what I'd be like size-wise if I wasn't vegetarian, because I have kind of picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take some of that into consideration and see what I can do for it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
And one last tip I'd have for the caller, too, would be, as a vegetarian, just to really make sure, too, that you haven't dropped protein too far, because that can happen, and depending upon what kind of vegetarian, you know, you are, you could certainly find that you're just not eating enough protein to maintain muscle mass. So what happens, you've really lost a lot of your muscle, and maybe it's easier to gain some body fat then. So making sure that at least you take your body weight and divide it in half if you're moderately active. So for you, maybe 100 grams of protein would not be too much to try to get in on your diet to make sure that might help facilitate you staying strong.
Okay, let's take another call now. A listener on a cell phone, line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I had heard the report about some chemical in clear plastic that was of concern, especially for babies and young children, mm-hmm. and that some moms have dropped the clear plastic baby bottles and gone back to glass or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that still brings me to the question of, you know, carrying water around. Seems a shame to have to buy water in bottles, you know.
Right.
And the handy refill bottle is, you know, kind of appealing. So kind of hate to give that up. And I don't know if there are any other alternatives you know, the choice between either filling up your old water bottle or continually buying new water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the, I guess, semi-clear plastic from Gatorade,
mm-hmm.
you know, the 20-ounce bottles, and that's, you know, really handy.
Right.
Sort of hate to give it up.
Well, and you do want to stay hydrated. I mean, one thing to consider, and now we're seeing all these bottles on the market that are just washable bottles. They may be metal bottles. They may be, you'll see all kinds of them now on the market.
Where do you see them?
I think even at most of the Target and even Walmart and all those places,
mm-hmm.
and then sports stores, you can find a lot of bottles that seem like they run from maybe, oh gosh, anywhere from maybe $5 to $15 or something, but they're just washable bottles that don't have the plastics that you can carry with you.
They're and, like stainless steel?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
Some of them are, mm-hmm. and I think there are some other plastic bottles out there that are not, that are more safe plastic bottles as well, that are really meant to be refilled. And that's
and
what I do.
Does,
you know,
how does one identify those?
I think you'll see they're basically in any even sports store as well, where you'll find bottles that are more like even hiking water bottles and those kinds of things that have
mm-hmm.
the types of plastics I think that are much better. And they're not just a plain water bottle you would buy
mm-hmm.
and throw away or recycle. And so that might be worth doing too, because then you can still feel like, yes, I'm still carrying
mm-hmm.
my bottle and I'm doing what I need to do fluid-wise.
Okay. Those are good suggestions. Thank you.
You're very welcome. The old thermos bottle.
Thermos bottle, right.
Or the stainless steel. They for coffee drinkers, they come in a, you know, if you want to carry a hot beverage, there are a number of stainless steel sizes and makes. And
sure.
You know, and you can find them in, you can find them in housewares sections of stores.
Right.
You can find them in camping departments,
mm-hmm.
in sporting goods stores.
Yes.
So.
And I think the, like you're saying, those, what we would have thought of the stainless steel for hot beverages, now they have a lot of those kinds for the cold too.
Sure.
So I think it'd probably be a good investment. And besides the whole environmental issue, which we won't get into, but which is another reason I think people are concerned about the bottled water.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line 1. Hi.
Hi. I'm again calling about the plastic question. And I think the offending one I've been reading about is bisphenol A, or I think that's the polycarbonate, and they do usually say clear, hard plastic. I have it's kind of a dark blue hard plastic one, and the number on it at the bottom is 7, which I think is kind of a variety of different ones. So I have wondered, but since it's not clear, I said, well, maybe it's okay. But I think that's maybe the one that's been in the news some.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, some danger, maybe especially to children. I'm not sure. But I just thought I'd throw that in.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. You know what we should do probably here in the afternoon magazine? We should do a short segment on this, like later in the program, one day following the closing market or report
mm-hmm.
or something, and sort it all out.
It would be great.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. And let me invite listeners, other listeners, to join us. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. If you've got questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. In the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, use our toll-free line, that line, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. Back we go to the phones. Listener in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Your guest had suggested to a vegetarian caller the need to maintain protein intake, and I'm wondering what suggestions she has for people like that about protein.
Okay, very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it depends on the type of vegetarian one is, and certainly if someone does include milk products and eggs and fish, then it's much easier because those are all fantastic protein sources. But if someone doesn't include any animal products at all, then you would want to look at things like certainly beans and peas. I think we totally underestimate the value of the bean. I think it's kind of like a lowly bean, but it's actually so helpful because it's high in protein as well as fiber and other nutrients and B vitamins. So you would think about things like beans or hummus or certainly soy products. And particularly, I'm a big fan of trying to use as many more natural soy products like tofu or even using soy milk or tempeh, foods like that, because those can really help. Nuts and peanut butter. Nuts are a great source of protein, great source of fiber. We now know that they may play a lot of roles in disease prevention and cardiovascular disease in particular. So that's very helpful as well. And even looking at some of the higher protein grains that are out there, things like couscous and quinoa and barley and wheat berries, and there are a lot of grains that really are not difficult to prepare, but they're higher protein grains. Nowadays, you'll even see if you go, let's say, just to look in the bread department and you look at bagels, for example, there are many bagel brands that have 8 or 10 grams of protein per bagel, which we didn't used to see. So they've sort of bumped up protein and fiber in a lot of the grains that are out there as well. So maybe even just looking at, well, which type of bread am I getting? Am I getting a little bit higher protein bread or these other grains? And so it's very possible in a really healthy diet to get 30-40% of your protein intake from vegetables and grains. And then you can look at these other beans and peas and nuts and seeds and things like that for your additional proteins. But it's also very easy to eat a very low protein diet if you don't eat meat, because we can typically have salads and a little bit of bread and some fruit and think that that's an okay meal, and it's certainly healthy. It's just going to be very low in protein unless we add nuts to the salad, or we look at adding mm-hmm. beans, or have a little hummus on the side or something like that, where you're thinking, yes, the protein's there. One of my rules of thumb when people change their diet to vegetarian is to say, you know, of course, a vegetarian diet can be very healthy and a very great diet to use, but you do want to think whatever you take out of your diet, you want to add something else in its place. So when you take out meat, that's fine to do that. You just want to say, well, maybe I'm going to add in beans, or I'll add in, again, I'll bake some tofu and I'll have that, or I'm going to have something in that place of mm-hmm. that meat, and then that just makes it so much easier to make sure that you're not missing anything in the diet.
Is there a reference either on the web, mm-hmm. Susan, or a book that you recommend, a reading list that you have
sure.
for folks who are interested in changing their diet to
right.
a vegetarian or vegan diet?
Yes, there are a couple things I'd recommend. One is the Vegetarian Resource Group. And I believe the right website for that is just www.vrg.org. So it's the Vegetarian Resource Group. And that's a fantastic website with all kinds of recipes, all kinds of information on vegetarian eating. And it's really a super resource for books and everything else. There's also Vegetarian Times, which is a magazine that's good. And some other resources like that are out there as well. So the American Dietetic Association also has some books on vegetarian eating, which are very helpful, and that's just www.eatright, EATRIGHT.org. So those would all be some good places to look as well.
Okay, did that take care of our listener there in Urbana?
One follow-up question,
okay.
If I may. You mentioned some things that have a lot of fat, like soy, like peanut butter. How do you reckon with the fats in some of these sources of protein?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is one thing, because you often will get some extra fat with that. I haven't tried it yet, but I did just get a shipment of powdered peanut butter. I don't know if anybody's tried that. I saw it somewhere and emailed the company to see if I could get some samples of that. So, and it's still got protein, but it's much lower fat. So there are some things like that out there. And certainly many of the soy foods are very low fat. So that's an easy place. And beans themselves are very low fat. And even something like, tempeh or if you're using hummus or a black bean hummus, you can make that with just a little bit of olive oil so you don't have to worry about the fat. The nuts and the seeds, as you mentioned, those are the things we really have to watch, or even soy nuts, because those do add up. A serving of peanut butter for about an ounce of protein is about 2 tablespoons, and that's going to be about 200 calories. So that does add up fast. The good thing is that most of that fat is good fat. In other words, it's more monounsaturated fat. So from a standpoint of being healthy, it's good fat to eat. It's just that from a calorie, overall calorie standpoint, you do want to maybe not have too many, you know, too many sources of the nuts and seeds in your diet for protein if you're looking at calories as well.
Okay. And so in that... That part of the diet is about, if I'm remembering correctly, about a quarter cup a day. That's the
right. A quarter cup is about an ounce or so of nuts, of almonds or other types of nuts or seeds. And typically that might be 10 grams of fat. So that's about 2 teaspoons of fat in that. So it's certainly not low.
Yeah.
And that's why the calories are higher.
Is tofu high in fat?
Tofu is generally moderate in fat. It's not typically very high. So tofu or tempeh or the other soy products like that would be good options that would be lower fat. And even things like non-fat soy yogurt, which a lot of people like. And that's a way to get the protein, or soy kefir, the drinkable type of yogurt, but it's made from the soy as opposed to milk. And then that's another way to bump up protein quite a bit without the fat.
Okay. Let's take another call now. A listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
Hi, yes. I guess I have kind of the opposite question, because I'm 26 and I'm trying to add a little bit more definition with a workout plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been thin, so it's very difficult for me to be able to see any definition appear. And so I'm curious if there's a different kind of eating schedule that I could be on, or a different foods I could add to it that would help with that.
Well, in your case, you want to really go for those nuts and seeds, because actually they're one of the best things you can add, because they're so high in calories along with the protein. So, and there wouldn't be, you know, for example, I just put a plan together last week for one of my athletes who's doing the same situation, where he's really trying to bump up calories and gain some weight, but he wants to be healthy. And he's eating a cup of nuts every day. Now, a cup of nuts every day is about 800 calories worth of nuts. And he can handle it in his diet, because he's had a lot of trouble gaining weight. And so that also gives him real quality protein, spreads it out throughout the day. So, you know, natural peanut butter in particular, and nuts and seeds would be maybe the first thing that I'd look at. And another thing I would look at for you is saying, well, if you're trying to increase strength and definition with your workouts, make sure that you go into every workout really well nourished. In other words, you know, eat a good snack or meal a couple hours before. And we do know that even 15 minutes before, having something like as simple as milk or chocolate milk or even part of a recovery shake before you lift is helpful, because it provides available amino acids to the muscle as well as some carbohydrate energy. So I would do that. And then after you lift, every time you get done lifting, I would take in a recovery shake if you're not already doing it, or some type of food. You know, we've talked before about chocolate milk as recovery. Maybe you take in 2 or 3 cups of that, or you take in Carnations and breakfast, or a Metarex shake or Gatorade shake or something. That's one of the recovery things. So that you're surrounding your workouts with fuel, because we know that your body's much more apt to assimilate that energy into muscle when you train if you're getting fuel before and after your workouts. And then the third thing I would do is I would look at, are there ways you can just increase calories in general throughout the day with liquids? Because that's a simple way to do it. Drink more juice, drink more milk, drink a smoothie, drink a shake before you go to bed. Those kinds of things where it all keeps you hydrated and it's not so much extra food on your stomach. So all those ways are ways to bump up calories, but not necessarily, you know, feel like you're eating all the time or eating too much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. Maybe you'd give us an idea, Susan, for a smoothie. What might this guy put into a blender, or use a stick blender with, or something to...
Yeah.
What kind of ingredients can he enjoy?
Yeah. Well, here would be a good example. Maybe take something like 2% milk or chocolate milk, maybe a cup of that, and add in 2 or 3 tablespoons of peanut butter. Add in a banana, because a banana is a high starch, high nutrient, you know, food there. Add in banana. And you could also add in a little bit of wheat germ or even ground flax, which gives some fat, but it's, again, good fat. It's very good for you. You could add in something like a Carnations to Breakfast packet to that, which adds another 150 calories or so. And easily you can drink a shake that's their 600 or 700 calorie shake, but it's not too much saturated fat. It's just, it's a lot of calories, and then you could throw in a little ice with that. So that's one thing you could do. Or you could even say, well, maybe take 2 cups of a high calorie juice, like grape juice or cranberry juice or pineapple juice, have that, then maybe add in a couple scoops of ice cream or ice milk to that. And you could even add in some additional dry skim milk powder. You know, you can buy the non-fat dry skim milk powder and add in maybe 2 or 3 tablespoons of that for a little additional protein and mix that up. So it might be juice and a frozen yogurt or ice cream, and add in some additional dry skim milk powder, another Carnations breakfast packet, something like that. And so there you're drinking maybe 20 ounces of a shake that's 800 or 900 calories as well.
Okay. So if you got your thermos, you could fill it up with juice and put a banana in your box and...
Yeah.
That's another way to do it.
Exactly. Between meals, you really think about not missing out on
handful
fuel.
Handful of raisins.
Sure. Trail mix, those kinds of things, that just to have handy.
Graham crackers.
Graham crackers, especially with peanut butter.
Okay. Let's take another call now. Listener in Charleston, line one. Hi.
Hi. Would you happen to know whether low thyroid can be improved by diet, or is that strictly medicine?
Well, in my experience, it's typically medicine. I mean, if your thyroid is low and it's a medical condition, then often that responds to, you know, getting on some medication to increase that. Sometimes thyroid function is, you know, can change with exercise or diet. If someone's not eating enough to begin with and they start eating better, you know, I've seen that sometimes have an effect on thyroid. But I think if it's clinically low, then generally that would need to be, you know, you'd have to get on medication with that. And then you might feel like doing more if your thyroid got in the normal level as well.
So exercise might help as well?
Well, I don't know that it, I mean, I don't know for sure that it would actually change it clinically. In other words, you know, move it enough that you would see changes that you would need to see for health reasons.
Okay.
But more apt what happens when I work with clients, if their thyroid is not in a normal level, thyroid function, or they need to be on medication for that, once that gets evened out with medication, then often you'll feel so much more like exercising, and you'll have more energy, and because all that does affect your body's energy level.
Okay. But it's a lifetime medication, it sounds like.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, typically it is for someone. But there may be, you know, different cases, but I would check that out with your doc first.
Okay.
With that, yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrot is our guest this afternoon. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes here, Susan. And before we go, I know something that you suggested maybe we would talk a little bit about this afternoon was confusion at the vitamin counter. We're learning that we might be getting too much of something and not enough of others.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your advice in terms of making sense at the vitamin counter? What kind of multivitamin should we take?
Well, I do think it's helpful for everyone to be on a 100% multivitamin. That's 100% of key nutrients for your age and gender. So it might be a woman's over 50 if that's where your category is. I think that's important for everyone. I think that's very helpful. I think where some of this confusion lies is whether or not we should be taking extra things. And there was an article that just came out in this month's Nutrition Action Health Letter, which is a real good reputable resource on nutrition, talking about how now there's, you know, we're real concerned now that maybe people are getting too much folic acid, for example, because we certainly put that in a lot of foods, and it's helpful to prevent against neural tube defects. But we think that might be related to certain cancers, too much folic acid, and also too much selenium, possibly. And
too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. And so those are two you probably need to be aware of. If you're taking a lot of extra, maybe reconsider that. Talk with your physician or your dietitian about that. And then one that we know we're probably too low in is vitamin D. And we can talk more about that another time. But there's some general recommendations coming out that are about double what we have for our national recommendations now. So a lot of researchers really feeling like 1,000 IUs of vitamin D most people should be getting in, because it's low vitamin E now has been related to so many things. We know bone and strength and...
You mean D?
Or vitamin D, I'm sorry. Yes, low vitamin D levels. And so that might be something, too, that particularly where we live, where we don't get that much vitamin D from the sun, where it might even be more of a concern. So we might not be getting enough of that, so...
Okay, well, maybe we'll take that up in December.
Sure.
vitamin D at the top of the show. Susan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in December.
Too. Thank you.
Susan Kundrot is with Nutrition on the Move. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net.